This Focus with Paul W. Smith podcast is sponsored by Victor's Home Solutions. Visit victors.com, experts in home solutions.
Well, the weather is actually clearing about right now. It stopped raining. You know, when I was walking in, I actually had to watch out for the rain on my coif of my hair.
Great.
Well, thank you, Mike.
It's important to have great hair in radio.
Absolutely. You know, I take pride in my hair. And I made sure that I styled it appropriately for today's show. And I got to tell you that I was listening to the news beforehand and listened to these comments about potentially Biden having injections before the debate. I had some injections before the show today.
You're juicing.
Yeah, a little B12 shot, and I'm ready for the show today.
We should go to the batting cages and hit some dingers after this if you're, you know, still hopped up.
If we have time. But I hear it's supposed to rain a little bit more. You know, walking into the Fisher Theater, I looked down. I saw a couple quarters as it was pouring rain. And I guess that must have been my climate change.
Oh, hold on.
We
aren't ready for that caliber of comedy.
Well, we're here with the team, as Paul W. likes to say. Mike Parsons, the producer, Danielle Mason, the engineer, and Rich Luzenski. How do you like that proper pronunciation? From Rochkovsky, the traffic guy today. And as we're preparing for the show, we had a chance to catch up with Congresswoman Lisa McLean, who's going to be on the show a little bit later, who's stuck in the airport right now trying to get to Washington, D.C., and her plane actually is still sitting on the tarmac.
Yeah, I would imagine it's a tough day to travel to and from Michigan until this stuff clears out of here.
Well, you know, I don't think it's that bad. And you know, I remember flying in really torrential rain and hail in the past. You know,
overseas during combat?
That too.
Oh, you're talking about as a civilian.
As a civilian.
Oh,
I thought you were making
a point or something.
No. As a civilian, yeah. I don't think that, you know, our planes can't handle something like that. But, you know, also the prep up for the big rumble in the jungle, if I can even say that, the big debate that's happening in Atlanta.
This seems to be highly anticipated, and I think it's because of the rules. They're not allowed any conference or any notes. Do candidates normally have notes in debates, or is it always okay?
No, they're allowed to have in past debates. If you recall, in past presidential debates, I remember as a young kid watching the Bush
Dukakis.
Clinton.
not that.
Yeah,
not
thanks.
That long ago.
Thanks. The Bush and Clinton debates with Perot, and they had obviously papers in front of them, notes and so forth. And what's really interesting about this is the comment that Biden now has 16 debate preparers. What's a preparer?
I don't know. Is that 16 different people that
16,
helping?
Yeah, 16 different people that are helping him with different questions, staying on tune and how to attack or how to fight back when President Trump, former President Trump, attacks you. That seems a little bit of overkill, especially when Trump's out there on the circuit. And is barely preparing for this debate, but really out there on the circuit.
Well, he did make the joke that he might let Biden win this one so that the Democrats can't replace him, and then it's an easy path for him. So,
you know,
maybe that's what's happening.
I got to tell you, I'm still one of those people, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I took off my tinfoil hat before I came into the station, but I got to tell you that I truly believe, I still believe, that they're going to replace President Biden. And the reason for that is nobody in their right mind puts up a debate prior to a convention. Nobody, especially if you're the seated president and you're in the shape that you're in. You wait till after the convention, after you're nominated, and you have that convention bump.
So, I mean, this would probably be their last chance to make a change if Biden really, really has a poor performance, because I think you have to be far enough out that people get to know the candidate, but close enough so that they can't be properly trashed or vetted, you know, heading into November.
Very, very true. And what's interesting is his numbers are improving, but yet in the battleground states like Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, they're not improving. I still believe the campaign is going to come down to, and boy, am I proud to live in Michigan, a state where we will hash it out, because that means a lot more campaign dollars are going to be poured into this state, and we are going to be watching every ballot. Every ballot will count, and I'm going to encourage everybody to come out there and make sure that we have election integrity, and so that we make sure that there is no question about an election one way or the other.
Well, I think 2016 showed us that, Michigan's not an automatic win for the Democrats. And it was in play up until the night before, right? Trump saw that he was within striking distance.
That's
and
right.
It was like a midnight rally in Grand Rapids or something.
You're absolutely correct. He actually flew in to Grand Rapids Airport and had the rally after 1:30 in the morning.
Right.
And left there by 3 a.m. that morning, Election Day morning. And if you recall, they had over 30,000 people still waiting to get in to see Trump. And that was right before the election in 2016.
So it's not over till it's over.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And by the way, breaking news, Hunter Biden's law license, if you plan on hiring Hunter Biden to be your attorney, it's been suspended.
I'm sure there's a lot of people scrambling right now in Washington, D.C.
I know. They're looking for a new lawyer. Yeah. Absolutely. And we've also heard the breaking news today on a sad note. That the second individual that's been charged with the murder of the 12-year-old girl down in Houston, Texas, by the illegal immigrants, has been now arraigned and has a $10 million bail set for himself.
And I think I heard that the death penalty is not out of the question. Obviously, Texas is a capital punishment state. And
that is correct.
Doesn't matter if you're a citizen or not. I think it would apply no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. We're actually going to be talking about potentially the death penalty. I'm going to bring that up with Sheriff Bouchard. I know people have heard a lot from Sheriff Bouchard, but we need to hear a little bit more. And we're going to have Sheriff Bouchard talking about Deputy Reckling. And we're going to go a different direction in the first segment. And we'll kind of talk about the emotional side of this and how people can actually help and know that their money is going for the right reasons,
right,
for the right cause. We're also got a great show. We're going to be talking to Gordon Chang about the China threat. And, of course, we'll have Lisa McLean in the first hour. In the second hour, we'll talk to Paul Glantz, our friend from Imagine Theater, and what's coming up for the 4th of July, because a lot of people, they go up north and sometimes they even go see movies up north. And Paul's got a movie theater up in Saginaw, if I'm not mistaken. And we'll also hear from Dr. Basuito of what's happening at Wayne State University. That's our big lineup today.
Jam-packed.
Yeah, and actually, it's gonna be a fun 2 hours, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I've got high hopes.
Thanks a lot. We should poll test it and see how we come on.
Yeah, but, going back to Sheriff Bouchard, going back to the splash pad shooting, and obviously he's been talking about this longer than that. He just has a public platform. I think it's really important that he keeps reminding us sort of the mental health toll that this takes and that even police officers struggle with it.
All of us do. All of us do. Even those that are watch the news, there's a lot of negativity. And we're going to talk a little bit about the negativity and then kind of hopefully turn it into a positive of serving others. You're listening to The Focus Show. I'm Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for Paul W. Smith. We'll be back.
It was the hardest conversation I've ever had to have. And he was everything to them. And they're so young, so they understand, but I still don't think they fully grasp the gravity of everything. And every day is just going to be, it's going to be hard.
Deputy Reckling's wife, talking about the conversation she had with her three daughters. If that doesn't jerk your heart and bring a tear to your eye, I don't know what will. We're blessed to have a true leader in office who knew Deputy Reckling, and that is our very own Oakland County Sheriff Mike Bouchard, who's been in that office for 25 years and has served us with honor and integrity and led his department every step of the way. And I'm honored to have Sheriff Bouchard on today. And Sheriff Bouchard, the reason why we wanted you to be on, because we know you've been on every single radio station and TV talking about Deputy Reckling and about the incident itself. What we wanted to hear from you is how do the listeners, how does the public, how does the community put their arms around your department and every other police department? And how do we support the family and make sure that our support actually gets to Deputy Reckling and every other police officer, deputy, fireman, first responder, and dispatcher that pays the ultimate sacrifice and serves our community?
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you supporting our people, especially the family, in this incredibly soul-crushing moment. You know, as you heard her, I mean, he was the kid's world, but he was her world. I mean, they're a young, amazing family. They had just, the deputy had just finished some renovations on their home to prepare for the fourth child's arrival. I mean, the world was in front of them. He was, you know, one of our rising stars. So it was in front of him both personally and professionally. And it's just a cataclysmic crater that's now in front of them. And what we're trying to do is to make sure she knows, the family knows, that whatever they need, we're here. And the community has been super supportive. We have a fund set up, Mission Oakland, which is a licensed charity. You can go to our website at oaklandsheriff.com, and it's right there in the front. You can click that. 100% of what we get in goes directly to her. You know, we will never be able to fill the void that this creates, but we're hoping to take out some of the financial edges and craters that come. You know, there's not a lot that comes in the way of public safety spouses that survive. They get a one-time stipend typically from the state, one from the federal government, and maybe some health benefits for a period of months. But, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. So we're trying to raise money to take some of those concerns for her off the table. And then if I can bring in more, you know, I want to try to get some set aside for four amazing kids that, you know, ought to have educational opportunities that dad won't be around to see. But, you know, we want to support those. So maybe get some education funds going. So thank you for that. But also thank you for your support of my men and women and those in public safety. You know, I heard the commercial on your station just before I came on about suicidal iterations from our veterans. We know it's huge. There's a pretty high degree of awareness from the public. That's a big, big challenge and things that we have to support our veterans and our military. And, you know, you're from that community. Thank you for your service. But as you know, I've got a son in the military.
That's
and a
right.
son-in-law.
That's right.
So we know that there's pressures on them. But what sometimes doesn't get translated to the public is that in the last few years, there's been really high numbers of line of duty deaths in police work. And even a bigger increase in ambushes, which is kind of what this looks like happened to our Detective Reckling. But what the public may not be aware of is the number that has outstripped line of duty deaths for the last few years has been officer suicides. So, you know, we're trying to help our team, peer-to-peer support. I have one person that I eliminated one position that we really needed, but I felt this was a more important need. We have one person that's focused on taking care of almost 1,500 people. So I've asked the county for an emergency appropriation to fund one more position to focus on the health, mental health, and support our team that has gone through one terrible thing after another. No. And I've asked, you know, federal and state officials, they need to put money aside, not just for community health for everyone, which I have been advocating for, but also for first responders because of that suicide, because of the stress, because what we've seen can't be unseen. And so I'm calling on Washington, Lansing, fund some peer-to-peer, fund some mental health programs for public safety. And hopefully the county will get quickly on adding one more person that can be making these constant phone calls. How you doing? What do you need? Those things are important.
No, that's very, very well said, Mike Bouchard. Listen, you know, one of the things that in the military, and you brought this up, thank you for bringing that up. You mentioned that when one of my brothers or sisters were injured or lost their lives on the battlefield, their families had a life insurance benefit. Is there something that we can do that increases that life insurance benefit and gets it to the families immediately? Should we start a ballot initiative in the state of Michigan?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, there's a one-time stipend from the state of Michigan and a period of months for health care. But, you know, when you lose somebody for the rest of their life and the rest of your married life and your kid's life, I think maybe there's a way to pay a premium on behalf of the unknown that when it happens, an instant, you know, payout happens, because that's one of the big bumps that happens, is that all of a sudden paychecks stop and, you know, there might be some money that's going to come in. But as you remember, after 9/11, the largest single day death of police and fire in the country, there was a lot of paperwork and stalls to get them money. And I had just been at Ground Zero. And again, this amazing charitable community here in Southeast Michigan helped me raise $400,000 and give it to the fallen spouses of the police and fire in New York City, because there was such a delay getting them money.
So, I remember that.
Yeah, I think there should be a mechanism that immediately begins to help the family and thinks about them long term, not just, okay, here's a, you know, a stipend, thanks for his service, and then moves on to something else.
And I got to tell you that a great leader is one that takes care of his men and women, because that's really where the rubber meets the road. And I'm going to play a little snippet here from Ainsley Earhart in Fox News this morning. I know that you reached out to Tunnel of the Towers, and that is one of my favorite charities, and what Steven Siller does with Tunnel of the Towers. We have quite a few members from Jay Feldman and Feldman Chevrolet and others from our community, and General Motors, how active General Motors is in supporting Tunnel to Towers with their Heroes Gala. I'm going to play the snippet, which was actually a positive for today.
Jacqueline, you're raising three daughters. And when we were little girls, when we were little girls, we wanted to marry a wonderful man. You imagine spending the rest of your life with one person, and you found yours.
Yeah.
By the grace of God, you found your person. And now he's gone.
I did.
And you have to raise these three little girls. And I'm so sorry. I did talk to Frank Siller last night, and he said he's paying off your mortgage. And he's talked to you and told you, and so many of our viewers, give money to that organization. What did that mean to you?
It meant so much. It's going to allow me to spend more time with them, you know, and help them grieve and get through the loss and how to navigate this new version of our life. And there's been so much love and support from so many different foundations and businesses, and honestly, just our local community in general. So we are truly, truly appreciative for everything and everything that everyone has done.
Mike Bouchard, you know, I've listened to Chief White, and what he said really basically puts the silver lining on this, and that is that we have a true leader in Oakland County. You take care of your men and women and their families if we lose them on the watch. One more time, it's Mission Oakland, and where can we find that?
It's on the front page of our website, oaklandsheriff.com. There's a link right there. And thank you, Rocky.
God bless you, Sheriff Mike Bouchard. Thank you for your service, and may God bless Deputy Reckling and his family.
Thank you.
You're listening to Focus. He's given National Intelligence Council briefings, as well as the CIA, the State Department, Department of Defense, the alphabet soup of government agencies, and also testified in front of the U.S. House Committee on Foreign Affairs. We are blessed to have one of the preeminent masters of information about China and what China stands to benefit or lose with its potential saber rattling or proxy wars with the United States. It's Gordon Chang, and Gordon Chang can be found on his X handle. You can follow him on X at Gordon J. Chang. Gordon, how are you?
I'm fine, Rocky, and thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you on. Listen, there's so much breaking about China right now and about the relationship with Russia and China and Russia with North Korea. Can you kind of unravel what's been happening this last week with China and the entire operation between Russia and North Korea for us?
Yeah, probably the most important thing that happened in Asia was, of course, Vladimir Putin going to Pyongyang and for them to sign up a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement, which included a clause which looks like a treaty, a mutual defense treaty. But also of importance this week is the Chinese belligerent actions at Second Thomas Shoal last Monday, the 17th, where China seized two Philippine craft, rammed another, injured at least 8 Filipino sailors, including one seriously. And they did this all in defiance of American warnings. So really, it shows that deterrence has broken down. And you put these two things together, and it's clear that there is, in a camp, China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, and some other countries. And this is the world dividing into parts. So we've got a very different international system these days, one which is much more dangerous.
But, you know, is China really the bank to this, what Bush called the evil empire once upon a time? Is China the financier of all of this?
Yes, it is, actually, because we know that it is supporting the Russian war effort in Ukraine, and it keeps North Korea afloat, as well as Iran. China's been purchasing a lot of oil from Iran. So, for instance, last year, more than 90% of Iran's exports of crude oil went to China. And that has permitted Iran to attack Israel through its proxies, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthi militia. All of those three terrorist groups have substantial quantities of Chinese weapons. I mean, the list goes on and on, but China is the combatant, the main combatant in the Middle East right now. And so we see a China that is destabilizing the world, throwing it into chaos.
And, you know, I actually served in Africa as well, and I'm seeing news reports that are just breaking the wire right now that Kenyan defense forces were firing on Kenyans that were protesting at their military. And I remember China has now been all over that Horn of Africa area, as well as Kenya, Tanzania. And why are they there? And that's number one. And number two is, if China is the financier of all this, who's funding China?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned North Africa, because I think that China's fighting three proxy wars: Ukraine, Israel, and North Africa.
Exactly.
And in North Africa, the Wagner Group before then was being financed by China to destabilize countries. And we see this both north and south of the Sahara, where China and Russia are fielding insurgencies that look like wars. And the question, why is China doing this? And who's financing China? Well, China finances itself, but we finance China ultimately because we buy their products, we invest in their country. So this is our fault. I mean, if we want China to stop attacking us, if we want China to stop fueling the war in Ukraine and all the other bad things it's doing, then we should just stop buying its products, because China couldn't do this without our money.
But you know what, Gordon? A lot of American economists are still saying that if we decouple financially from China, we could be hurting our own economy. Can you kind of address that a little bit and what China's biggest fear is of the United States becoming independent again?
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, when you stop trading with a country, it will have some negative effects. But everything we do going forward will have negative effects. And if we want to stop China attacking us, if we feel that China shouldn't be killing 75,000 Americans with fentanyl, then yes, we're going to have to take some setbacks. You know, you can't think that we can go forward after three decades of truly misguided China policy and not suffer some cost. So yes, we'll have to do it. But I believe that killing 75,000 Americans with fentanyl, in addition to other things, is completely unacceptable, and we have to stop funding it. And it's not only a question of economics, it's a strategic issue, but ultimately, it's a moral issue.
You know, one of the other interesting things is NPR, as a matter of fact, put out an article, actually, that talked about these Chinese illegal immigrants that are crossing through our southern border that are working in cannabis, Chinese-owned cannabis plantations in New Mexico. Are you tracking the amount of Chinese nationals that are crossing through our southern border? And what is their true intent? Is it to find freedom, like you see when they're being interviewed, or is it more sinister than that?
Well, it's not only New Mexico. It's also Oklahoma and Maine, and it's actually throughout the country where Chinese migrants have been involved in illegal marijuana grows. But they've also, in Oklahoma, for instance, been basing human trafficking operations on agricultural land. We see a lot of triad murders, so they're bringing crime with them. There's a million different motivations, as many motivations as there are individuals coming across. Some people want to live here and desperate to live in a free society, but others are coming here to harm us. And so we look at the change in composition of Chinese migrants. 2 years ago, primarily family groups. Now it is 80 to 85% single males, military age, traveling without family members. Border Patrol knows that some of them have links to the Chinese military. And we know they're engaging in very dangerous and belligerent activities when they come here. So this is a change in composition that is completely indicative of intent.
Gordon Chang, thank you for being on with us. Gordon Chang has been an attorney who spent over two decades in mainland China. And you can follow Gordon on his X at Gordon G. Chang. Thank you for being on with us on Focus on WJR. We'll be back. Now, I can't stop saying enough positive things about this next guest. She represents the 9th District in Michigan's congressional delegation, which is a lot of the Thumb, Macomb County, and northern Oakland County area. And just before we get into this segment, I wanted to tell you a quick funny story about, well, actually a positive story about this person. Lisa McLean has got to be one of the toughest, hardest working congresspeople we have in Michigan. And the reason for that is recently we had a little event at a place, and we were expecting Lisa to come and speak at that event, and she came in, and boy, she gave a great speech, and everybody was like, boy, you look a little tired. You look a little bit worn down. What's wrong? And she's like, I'm not feeling well, but I know I've got to do this, and I'm going to give my speech, and then I'll move on. Well, later did we find out that when she left that speech, Lisa went straight to the ER. Boy, Lisa, you're going to have to help me out on that. I'm not a doctor here.
An emergency appendectomy.
There you go. An emergency appendectomy. And I got to tell you, if anybody's gone through that, they know how painful that is. And this congresswoman is a real trooper. Lisa, we're proud to have you on WJR and wanted to hear your thoughts about what's going on in Washington and what's the scuttlebutt leading into this debate week between the two rivals, President Trump, former President Trump, and President Biden right now?
Well, I think everyone is actually pretty optimistic about it. I think this is a very unique opportunity that we have. I hope that we focus on the issues on how to move the country forward as opposed to the personalized attacks. But like I always say, if you can't beat us on the issues, you got to go and attack people personally, right? I hope we hear a compare and contrast the two presidential campaigns, since they both had the job before. They both have a track record, right? Take a look at the economy, take a look at inflation, take a look at crime, take a look at our foreign policy. And I really hope they focus on what are we going to do to get this country back on track. I mean, we just saw crime, unfortunately, in Oakland County, and my heart goes out to the family of the fallen officer. We've got to get our country back on track, and that's what I hope that we hear on Thursday night.
No, good point. And actually, very few people know this, but Deputy Reckling actually is a resident of your district, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah,
his family lives in your area.
It's my heart and goes out to his wife, 3 kids. They got one, little one on the way as well. And, here he is just trying to do his job, protect law-abiding citizens. And this happens to him. It's a shame on top of the splash pad incident that we just had in Rochester Hills. I mean, we have got to get crime under control. It's out of hand right now.
I completely concur. And I saw one of the posts that you put on X just recently where you said that $66 billion of U.S. taxpayer money is going to fund illegal aliens or residences and support for illegal aliens. And you compared that to the $3 billion that's being spent for homeless vets in the United States. Can you kind of tell us a little bit more about what's going on really get us down into the nitty and gritty and tell us what's going on in Washington and why is there such a vast misunderstanding of where taxpayer dollars should be spent?
I can't tell you why it's a misunderstanding. You'd have to ask the Biden administration for that. And I say that with a little bit of respect, but a lot of anger. We have veterans who have laid their life down for our country, and they're homeless. And we spend $3 billion. Compare and contrast that to the $66 billion that we spend on illegal immigrants. Forget about the legal people that are trying to come over to our country legally. We're talking illegal. And then I don't know if you saw this as well. In the state of Michigan, Biden just granted citizenship for about 50,000 illegals. To me, you have your ladder on the wrong wall. If you want to come into this country, there's a right way to do it, and there's a legal way to do it. And we should not be funding people who come here illegally.
No, you're absolutely correct. And, you know, little backstory, my wife came here legally as a young child with her parents. They were sponsored. And my parents came here legally, and they had to actually stay in line to get into the United States. My dad did. So yeah. I get it. And listen, we all welcome immigrants, but we talk about that they need to come here legally so that we can vet them. You know, Lisa, just breaking news just now, a little while ago, actually, the second illegal immigrant that was charged for the murder of the 12-year-old in Houston, Texas, $10 million bond and put in jail. And again, in that jail cell, we're going to be paying for that individual as taxpayers, and we're going to pay for that trial. We're going to pay for his court hearings. Is there anything being done? I know that the House is moving some immigration bills, but is there anything really being done in Washington, D.C.?
No, it's all smoke and mirrors. We passed, House Republicans passed H.R. 1, which was a border security bill that is, H.R. 2, that is sitting in the Senate, that they won't bring it up. Right. And then President Biden talks about, oh, well, he can't do anything about it. Well, it's his very executive orders that put us in this situation to begin with. That's why we always say election has consequences. That is, I think, one of the top important issues that the voters are going to be paying attention to come this November. It's completely, utterly out of hand. And if you think it's bad now, wait till you see it in our schools, in our hospital systems. I mean, we talk about Social Security and running out now. Well, what happens when all of these illegals, where do you think the money's going to come for those people? It's coming from somewhere. I mean, we're already paying for them now. I have a better idea. How about we take care of Americans first? Veterans first, and the people who come here legally.
Love it. I love it. Listen, Lisa, we've got 35 seconds. Real quick, tell me, do you think that this is going to be a knockdown, drag-out brawl of a debate? Or, I mean, realistically, what do you think? And is immigration, illegal immigration, going to take front and center? 30 seconds.
Well, CNN is hosting the debate, so I think Biden's going to get a bunch of softball questions, and I think Trump's going to get the hardball questions. But I think the true leader will show in talking, and that will be Trump, and he'll be talking about what he can do to move this country forward. Yes, he'll talk about border. Yes, he'll talk about illegal immigration. Yes, he'll talk about Bidenomics or lack thereof, inflation. I'm very excited and hopeful to see the contrast between the two presidential candidates.
Well put. Real quick, who's the vice presidential nominee for Trump?
You know what? I really don't know. Rumor has it that it might be Tim Scott, but we'll find out Thursday, I guess.
Well, thank you very much, Lisa McLean, the congresswoman from Michigan's 9th Congressional District. Thanks for joining us on Focus.
Thank you.
It's amazing what has happened outside. I think I am actually seeing the sun outside. And if you've loved the program so far, you're going to love this. Win a trip to see the Eagles at Sphere Las Vegas, an iconic band at an iconic venue. The Eagles, live at the Sphere Las Vegas, performing 12 shows this September 20th through November 9th. And you could be there. We've got two tickets for two. with flights and a stay at the Venetian Resort in Las Vegas. Dinner at Chica Las Vegas. That sounds a pretty interesting restaurant, Chica Las Vegas. And two tickets to the show, plus a VIP experience package. Prizes provided by Live Nation. And to enter for your chance to win, text this hour's national keyword, Bridges, to 95819. Bridges to 95819. And for full details and official contest rules, visit WJR.com. You know, we talk a lot about entertainment, and that's the Sphere is truly a beautiful place. And one of my favorite bands of all time, the U2, played there for quite a while. But we've got our very own entertainment capital here in Troy, Michigan. And Imagine Theater is actually headquartered in Troy, Michigan. And it's led by the founder and owner and CEO, our very own Paul Glantz. Paul, thank you for being on with the Focus Show.
Well, Rocky, thank you for having me. It's great to be with you.
Absolutely. Hey, you know, Paul, leading up to the 4th of July, a lot of people want to see movies. Believe it or not, the weather starts getting better, but it also rains quite a bit. And when it's raining, people tend to go see movies. So what's going to happen, or what type of movies are coming out so that people can come out to Imagine Theater and enjoy themselves, especially over that long weekend when they take that Friday day as a bridge vacation?
Well, I'll tell you, we've had sort of a slim pickings so far this year, but just within the last 2 weeks, the tide has turned. I say it was darkest before the dawn. And so we've been blessed with a Pixar film called Inside Out 2 that's just done spectacular business. It was the first picture this year to open for 100+ million. It was 155 million. It had great legs in the second weekend, did 100 million. And so we're going to carry that over, of course. But then we've got other films coming out that are going to provide entertainment for all different demographics, for folks that have different interests. So, for example, we've got another children's film, Despicable Me 3, coming out on 4th of July. And then we've got a film by Angel Studios. And maybe you recall last year, Angel Studios put out a film called The Sound of Freedom. This year, they've got a picture called Sound of Hope, A Story of Possum Trot, which is a very touching film about these children in Texas who are seemingly unadoptable, but in fact become adopted by these wonderful families who bring them in. And then Mike Rowe has produced a documentary that will be opening during the holiday weekend as well, which is, I'm told, is very inspiring. It's a great story that will unite our country, if there is such a thing to be had these days.
Well, if there's one person to unite our country, it's Mike Rowe. And you're another person that unites us all. And Paul Glantz, you do a lot for the community. Thank you for everything that you do in support of the community. You don't just offer us entertainment to go to, but you also do a lot of charitable work. And, you know, what's interesting is that all comes from business. And how is the business doing? Because how entertainment goes, so goes our economy.
Well, you know, last year, notwithstanding the fact that North American box office was down 20%, we had a terrific year. And then because of the Hollywood work stoppages, you know, the writers were on strike for almost 7 months last year. We ran into a bit of a supply chain constraint earlier this year. But those things are resolving themselves at this point in time. And we think that the rest of the year is going to be stronger. So we're optimistic. We think, you know, we've got a company that is resilient. We've made it through the pandemic, right? And we think we certainly can overcome this little supply chain constraint as well.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, you started in 1997 here in Michigan. So, and now you're in what, five states.
Yeah, and actually the predecessor to the current incarnation of Imagine goes all the way back to 1989. I had a partner at that time, one partner, and we bought a one-screen theater with 265 chairs. It had two mechanical projectors, one mechanical cash register, and today we have the privilege of being the ninth largest exhibitor in the United States.
And do you have any of that equipment still in operation?
No, it's hard to.
Thank you. Thank you. That's Danielle Mason, the engineer, who thought that that was a funny joke.
It's good. Yeah, there's not much room for mechanical projectors anymore. The studios don't give us 35-millimeter prints, I'm afraid.
Now, what are the big movies coming out for adults? I know you mentioned a lot of the kid movies and a couple documentaries, but is there any entertainment on the forefront? And how much notice does Hollywood give you or the industry give you so that you know what's coming down the pike? Because you are truly dependent on Hollywood, are you not? Or can you buy movies from other countries or Bollywood or anywhere else?
Well, in fact, we do show foreign language films, and our Asian Indian films do exceptionally well. We've got a wonderful niche audience with those folks who speak Hindi and Telugu languages, for example.
Together, yeah.
And so that's been a good thing for us. You know, lately we're doing more what we'll call experiential, the Imagine More component. So we've had speakers come in. So, for example, we've recently hosted the stars of the Halloween films, the gentleman who played the Michael Myers character in the Halloween series. We've had both those gentlemen come in and do Q&A with our audience. We had Helen Hunt. We've had most recently Ernie Hudson from the Ghostbusters genre. And so while we are highly, highly dependent on Hollywood, the truth is that if we can diversify our revenue stream by giving our guests access to folks that are beloved characters, then that's a real positive thing for us as well.
And how much notice do you really get from Hollywood? Like those studios, do they tell you that this is coming down the pike? Be prepared, and do they give you the paraphernalia to advertise this, or do you have to buy that actually from them?
No, most of the collateral materials that are provided to us these days are free of charge, although the royalties that we pay for films are hardly free of charge. In fact, you know, what most people don't really understand is that, you know, if you buy a $10 movie ticket, 60%+ of that goes to the studio, and we are allowed to keep, you know, less than 40% in many cases. And so, but for the privilege of selling food and beverage, we probably wouldn't have a viable business model.
Yeah, but you're doing really well. And again, thanks for all you do for the community. Paul Glanson and his team at Imagine Theaters. If you're around this weekend or next weekend, go out and get a movie, see a movie at Imagine Theaters. All around Southeast Michigan. Paul, thanks for being on with Focus this morning, this evening, or afternoon on WJR.
Oh, thanks again for hosting me, Rocky. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Paul. What a great song to start off. I'm blue. And, you know, I may not be blue, but the sky is starting to be blue. I'm starting to see it. The sun is popping out. But we're expecting some rain later on tonight. And it's actually a beautiful 72 degrees in the Motor City and around the metropolitan Detroit area. It's beautiful. But, you know, we call it the Motor City, but engines aren't the only horsepower in the Motor City. Detroit Horsepower is a nonprofit teaching Detroit kids life skills through working with horses and learning how to actually ride them. After a decade of work, the organization has purchased a 14-acre plot of land here in the city's northwest side to establish the largest urban equestrian center in the country. Isn't that amazing? WJR's senior news analyst Marie Osborne traveled to one of Detroit's Horsepower's summer camps to get a look at this extraordinary program and how it's helping kids one horse at a time.
Hi, Rocky. So last week we did travel to Three Moon Farm in Oakland Township, and that's where one of this summer's camps is taking place. Here's what it sounded like.
6 feet. There you go. Yep, there you go. Don't let him get away.
Lots of instructions. About a dozen Detroit kids traveled here to participate in a unique program that gives students an experience with horses where they can develop social emotional skills. The founder is 34-year-old David Silver, and he says it boils down to the acronym PERKS.
It stands for Perseverance, Empathy, Responsible Risk-Taking, confidence, and self-control, but our ultimate goal is that students translate those skills that they're learning from horses and apply them to our everyday lives.
In the last 10 years, more than 500 students have gone to more than 24 partner horse barns in the metro area for weekend sessions or week-long camps in the summer. For development director Sierra Gognard, horses are a perfect learning tool.
Horses have a unique power to really center in and hone in on the intrinsic social skills and social-emotional learning that our students need that they can't necessarily get in a classroom.
And on the day we visited, 14-year-old Malik Lawson was riding Joey. He says that the connection was instant.
I would say specifically with Joey, he kind of reminds me of myself.
How's that?
Yesterday when I first met him, he had like a chill vibe with him, and he had a big appetite like me. So.
A key part of this program is learning how to coax the horse into getting them to do what you want them to. Grooming and cleaning stalls is a big part of the entire program that David Silver says teaches the kids about work and reward. This is 17-year-old Madison Wells.
I like to, groom the horses and be around nature, and I like riding them too. That's the funnest part, but I still enjoy like grooming them and stuff like that. Even cleaning like the stables, like if I don't have anything to do and like we're just watching everybody else ride, I'll go clean like some spots up or somewhere, sweep the barn or something.
And the organizers, David Silver, saying these students who come through the program often go on to leadership roles within the organization. A lot of them go on to college. If you want to learn more, you can go to DetroitHorsePower.org. They have the architectural renderings there of this horse barn that they want to build. And you can head over to WJR.com. Our digital team has put together a really good video about our visit with the Detroit Horsepower.
That's a great story, Marie. You know, when I was a kid, we used to go up in the Thumb area for camps, and our parents would let us learn how to ride horses and so forth. And I learned so much about responsibility and riding a horse. I think it's one of the best things that we could be doing is teaching our younger students, especially the urban youth that may not have an opportunity to go out on a farm or see what it's like or even ride a horse, to experience that.
Right. And you heard one of the students say that he has to learn his horse's cues, like watching the ears go back. And a lot of youngsters don't develop those skills. They just don't have the opportunity to develop that. But you have to in order to be around horses, or else you're going to get hurt or you're going to not care for your horse properly. So it teaches them really these great life skills. And also, as you heard, David Silver was a rider. He's the one who founded this. He was a rider, and he said he basically learned how to overcome adversity. You just have to keep trying.
No, you really do. And I learned how to ride a horse again many years later before I went overseas in the military. They took us down to Fort Bragg, and the 12 strong, the story about the horse soldiers in Afghanistan. Yeah. Actually, the captain was the one that taught our team how to ride horses and go overseas. We had to learn how to ride horses and donkeys. So it's a great story, Marie. Thank you very much for joining us on the Focus program. This section, we're also going to be talking to, we actually have David Schmelz on. He's a Fox News contributor and part of Fox News Radio. And what we're hearing right now from the Department of Transportation is that they're going to allow full cash refunds if your flight's been canceled. And how many of us have had canceled flights before where we'd have to get off that plane and sit there and get all angry with the airlines? Well, now the DOJ is doing, Department of Transportation, DOT is doing something about it. And we've got Ryan Schmelz to tell us about it. Ryan.
Hey, Zach. Yeah, how are you?
Excellent. Tell us a little bit about this new, is it a administrative action or an actual law? It's a administrative action, isn't it?
It's an administrative rule. So, airlines have been traditionally the ones who set their own standards for refund policies when, a flight is delayed or canceled. Now, the Department of Transportation is making this an industry-wide standard now. So the new rules include, if your flight is canceled by fault of the airline or if it's delayed 3 hours for a domestic flight or 6 hours for an international flight, that airline now has to provide you a full refund, and you're not supposed to be the one who does the requesting. They're supposed to go ahead and do this immediately and deposit that money back into your account.
You hear me laughing because I don't believe that. Do you?
Well, I mean, they've got to follow the law or they could be subject to some significant fines. And obviously, you know, public exposure to this, too. So, yeah, I mean, it's part of a rule. They're going to have to follow it or there's going to be consequences.
So is part of the administrative rule, does it have penalties if they don't basically follow through on reimbursing these flights?
I believe they do. I don't know what specifically those penalties are, but there are going to be penalties for them.
You know, we're blessed here in the Detroit area as having a hub. We used to have Northwest Airlines as our hub, and now we're Delta. And Delta's been fairly good to us here in the Detroit area. You know, obviously we've got weather issues and mechanical issues, and people need to truly understand that when you've got those issues, you've really got to put you're putting your hands in other people, your lives actually, in other people's hands. So
yeah.
You want to make sure that these things work properly, right? But when you're on the tarmac, you know, I understand that there were federal laws that were passed that do not allow an airline to sit on the tarmac for over, what is it, hour and a half or 2 hours now?
I believe so, correct, yes. And, you know, the FAA just went through a reauthorization process, so a lot of this is renewed, and there's a lot of new laws that are on the books now for them to follow and new standards.
So, Ryan Schmelz, you're telling us that if our flight is canceled for over 3 hours, we don't have to ask for a cash refund. It's going to be done automatically.
No, you shouldn't. As long as you don't get on the newly scheduled flight. So if you like have to, you know, if you pretty much can't go where you're supposed to go because of a delay that lasts longer than 3 hours, they're going to have to refund you.
Okay, but we're still captive in that airport because there's no other way to get home, right?
Well, yeah, that's pretty much the case. Yeah.
Okay, so this administrative rule is good for, I guess, a good interview.
If there's a full blown cancellation, they have to refund you completely.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Ryan.
Of course.
You're listening to Focus on WJR. We'll be back with Dr. Michael Busuito and some information about Wayne State University. It's been some time now that we've heard the news of the protests at Wayne State, the Palestinian protests in Wayne State, and what happened there. And we may need to get a little bit more information about what actually happened to move those protests off the campus grounds. But what's interesting is that Wayne State is going to have a board of governors, like every university has a board that governs that university. University of Michigan has regents, they call them. MSU has trustees. Wayne State University has board of governors. And one of the board of governors is a gentleman named Dr. Michael Busuito. And he's not just a doctor, like a PhD doctor. He's a real doctor. He's a reconstructive surgeon. And he sits on the board of governors at Wayne State University. So we're here to welcome Michael Busuito.
Rocky, good talking to you.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Dr. Busuito, real quick question for you. What's going on with the Board of Governors having a virtual meeting now? Yeah, I guess
we're
you moved.
Do it. You know, our scheduled meeting is going to be done via Zoom tomorrow. We just thought that for all parties involved, it would be the best way to go under the circumstances.
And what are the circumstances? Why move it to a virtual meeting?
Well, you know, at the last meeting, let me say that we honor the First Amendment of free speech. However, you know, there are time, place, and manner clauses, you know, restrictions involved here. And, you know, school's out for the summer, and we know that there are probably going to be some professional protesters who are going to want to be there. And we just thought it would probably be safest if we just did this virtually. You know, we had the situation where the encampment was set up on campus during the last meeting, and we have two parties here to deal with. Firstly, we have our tuition-paying, law-abiding students. And then on the other hand, we have some professional protesters who are not students who are breaking the law. And it was my opinion, I'm going to speak personally, not for the board, it's my opinion, that we have to prioritize our tuition-paying, law-abiding students over the professional protesters who are breaking the law.
Of course.
And we have to come up with a formula that provides the safest avenue for all parties involved. So we chose to do it virtually tomorrow. Like I said, school's not in session. We'll be back in session in the fall. And we've got an unbelievable police force at Wayne State University, and they guide us, and we find that they always give us great advice.
Yeah, well said. But I guess, has there ever been a research, or do you have the exact numbers of how many of the protesters were outside the university and how many were actually university students?
I do not have that number, but I can tell you that the majority of the arrests were non-students.
We're non-students. How about that?
Correct.
On the property of Wayne State University. That's great.
Yes.
So
yes.
Let's move on to some better and brighter news. Tell me a little bit about what's going on at Wayne State University. And I'm reading a lot about the fact that Wayne State University is probably the biggest bang for your buck out of any university. And forward mobility offers the most forward mobility for most people going to Wayne State University here in downtown Detroit. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
You know, we are really, really blessed in the state of Michigan in that we have so many fine colleges and universities available where we can send our children and they don't have to be a flight distance away on an airplane. But if you look at the Carnegie Foundation classification of universities, there are what we call the R1 universities. Those are the most intense research. And the metrics they use are your research portfolio dollars and the number of PhD programs you have. And we have three R1 universities in Michigan. And one is the University of Michigan, one is Michigan State University, and the other one is Wayne State University. And they all serve their purposes. And to put it in perspective, we have over 8,200 colleges and universities in the country. Only 146 have an R1 classification, and those are the three: Wayne State, Michigan, and Michigan State. If you look at what sets Wayne State apart from Michigan and Michigan State in terms of the three R1s, number one, we're an urban university, and we find college-age students nowadays want an urban situation, an urban atmosphere in which to live and learn. So we have become very attractive now to college students because they can get a world-class, high-intensity research R1 education at our institution, and they can live in the city, and this is what they want. The other thing is we're number one in the state in social mobility, and which means that we look at the socioeconomic level at which these students start from the standpoint of the families they come from, and we then follow them in a linear fashion and find out where they end up in their careers and how their socioeconomic status has improved. And I'm going to give you some numbers that just blow me away. First of all, if you look at the mean family income for families of students who go to Michigan State University, it's $164,000 a year. If you look at U of M, it's $356,000 a year, which is more than double that for what Michigan State University is. At Wayne State University, the mean family income for our students is $79,000, which it means Michigan State's more than double, and U of M is more than quadruple. So you can see that we draw a different student in a different family. And I like to say that because of that, because we're number one in social mobility, I describe it as Wayne State as being a place where the American dream still lives on, where we have all these first-generation college students, and we're able to provide them a world-class education, and they can drastically improve their lives.
That should be in a commercial for Wayne State University.
You know, we're so proud of that. That's really what sets us apart from Michigan and Michigan State.
Yeah, Dr. Michael Basuito, you're also a plastic surgeon and a reconstructive surgeon, and you know, we've got a few minutes left, so I'm going to touch on that taboo topic that so few people actually get a chance to talk about, and that is weight loss drugs and these fake and fraudulent weight loss drugs that you can buy on the internet. Can you touch a little bit about that, what you know about the Ozempics and the fake Ozempics?
You know, I'm not a weight loss doctor, but I work very closely with weight loss centers and bariatric surgeons who perform the weight loss surgery. And so I'm in touch with this stuff. And these drugs are called semaglutides. And how they work is First of all, they mimic a gut hormone, and in the brain they act to make you believe that your belly's full, that you're not hungry. So that's one way you lose weight. And the other way you lose weight is by, it affects your vagus nerve, which is a nerve that runs along your esophagus, your food pipe, and it causes slowing of the stomach emptying into the bowel by affecting the vagus nerve. So when you eat, the food contents sit in your stomach a lot longer and you feel full and you don't eat much.
Maybe I shouldn't have asked this question.
You know, and here's where it's really created a problem from a standpoint of anesthesia, because when you go to sleep for general anesthesia, you can't have anything in your stomach because otherwise you'll aspirate it and you get pneumonia. But anyway, there's a lot of complications involved with these drugs. There's a lot of fake drugs out there, and I think it's a very dangerous thing to play with. And I would only purchase these drugs from reputable pharmacies or hospitals.
Well said. Thank you, Dr. Michael Basuto, Board of Governors of Wayne State University. You're listening to Focus, and our last set, we're going to have a chance to do a little crosstalk with our very own Chris Renwick, who just surprised me here in the studio. You know, I wanted to kind of talk a little bit before we leave about the Olympics and about NBC's coverage of the Olympics, which is about a month away, if I'm not mistaken.
Month from tomorrow.
Starts, so what, July 23rd to August 11th?
26th. So a month from tomorrow.
Okay, well, I'm not sure if anybody has seen this, but NBC has a brand new Olympic correspondent. The very own, the great Snoop Dogg is joining NBC to be their Olympic correspondent.
That's going
to
be awesome. So let me just say, so it was the last Olympics, so last Summer Olympics 4 years ago, he and Kevin Hart were in the studio and they did like running commentary between the two of them. For Olympic coverage, it was he and Kevin Hart. They would sit at a desk and they would riff on whatever. And it was marvelous.
Yeah, I'm sure it was hilarious, too. But on the bright side of things, you got to at least say that I'm grateful to God that the athletes are being drug tested and not the correspondents.
I was probably in Snoop's contract. No drug testing.
Yeah. Do you think they did this specifically to attract a younger audience?
Yes. Yeah. How much younger? I mean, because Snoop's been around for 30 years.
Okay, what are you trying to say, Mike?
Like young, like what, 20-somethings?
No, those are kids.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows people. Who Snoop Dogg is.
Yeah.
We're talking young people like Renwick and myself.
Yeah, like 40. I think the 40, the 40 and 50-year-old crowd are going to like it, but I don't know, like, underneath that.
Listen,
no,
Parsons.
No, I'm in the 30s, and the 30 crowd likes that, too.
Yes.
Well, okay.
I won't argue with that. So the 30 and up crowd, that's the money
demographic.
That's the demo.
But, yeah. But wait a minute, Danielle, the 50 today is the old 30, so
I guess
we're all the same.
We're not going that far into it.
Yeah, we are.
No.
Yeah, we are. You know, talking about athletics, also, by the way, a big round of applause. Danielle, can you hit the round of applause? Big round of applause. Thank you. To our very own, and I'm not really very own, but it's the Miami Panthers for winning the Stanley Cup in Game 7, which was really exciting. You know, we miss the Stanley Cup here in Detroit, but at least the United States won it. And this continues.
Keep it out of Canada, please.
Yes, it continues a 31-year drought.
Good.
You know, 31 years for our neighbors to the south and to the north.
That's great.
Beat out Kenny Holland's new team, too.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. But you know what's really crazy is, and by the way, they're owned by a West Point graduate. Go Army, beat Navy. But what's really great about this is that, you know, we talk about Canada having a 31-year drought of the Stanley Cup, but yet at the same time, we share these beautiful fireworks last night with our friends to the south and north.
Yeah, look, so I was actually at the fireworks last night, so I didn't get to see the game.
That's why you have bags under your eyes.
So yes, very very sleepy. But I got the game on DVR, so I'm gonna go back and watch it tonight.
So
because I'm a sicko,
we gave them a nice fireworks show, and then we crushed their dreams.
Yeah, but wait a minute, we just broke the news. The Panthers won.
Yes,
Chris.
Yes, Panthers won. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. What's going on in the show today?
We got a lot to do. We're going to talk at 2:18 about the debate coming up. And I'm going to ask people to just lay their cards on the table. Like, push, you got to push all your chips to the center, lay the cards out. We're going to do a little bit of, like, you need to name what's going to happen here. Because I think there were a lot of people that looked at Donald Trump agreeing to the terms of this debate and said, this completely handcuffs him. This completely cuts out his legs and what he's able to do and what he's best at. I think it's the opposite. I think it's going to actually help him. And I think it's going to put the spotlight on Joe Biden. Now, do we get State of the Union Joe Biden? Or do we get late night, impromptu, I'm a totally lucid, commander in chief, and I knew when my son died guy? Like, who are we going to get? So I think I'm going to ask everybody to push their chips to the middle of the table. I want you to call your shot and tell me what you think is going to happen. And we'll talk about, the nuts and bolts of what we expect to hear, what we want to hear from a policy debate perspective. But I want to know what you think is going to happen.
All right, Renwick, you're the House. I bet on the House. My chips are all in on the House.
Okay.
And I say this helps Trump big time. And because Trump is Trump.
Yes.
And when he's Trump, he's uncontrollable and he's lucid and he's free-flowing with ideas. And that's what I think people are looking for now. After 4 years of Joe Biden, they're looking for somebody that is a little bit more exciting and someone that can bring a different perspective to what we've had.
But go back to 2020, in that first presidential debate between the two of them.
Where
the mics weren't cut off. I think it hurt Donald Trump.
Yes, I agree.
I think he was...
Back then, yes.
The appearance was, this guy just can't rein it in. And I remember sitting there thinking, if he would just stop and let Joe Biden talk... there would be a clear line of delineation in people. I think it
completely
hurt him.
Agree with you. Chris.
So I think from that perspective, it's going to help him now. And look, he's going to do the whole Jake Tapper, CNN, blah, blah, blah. This is not fair deal. He's going to do that. And I think it's going to resonate with a big portion of the base. But is he going to be able to continue to pull those people from the middle? Is he going to be able to continue to pull moderates or independents or people that have even donated to his campaign as of recent? Is he going to continue able to pull those people onto his side? I think he can. Is this the format for it? I don't know.
I got to tell you that I was with him in a little public disclosure here. I was on his campaign team as a campaign chair in 2016. I was on his campaign team, national campaign team, as a veteran chair in 2020. Mm-hmm. And this time around, I think his messaging is much more succinct and he's much more affable. Much more likable than before in 2020.
But see, why is that? Coming from a first term when, a lot of people were turned away by his personality.
Because now people have seen.
They've seen the other side of the fence.
They've seen the other side of the fence.
Yeah.
And they realize, that a mean tweet every now and then is not so bad when the economy's booming.
Sure.
So we'll see what happens.
It's interesting.
But it is going to be a rumble.
It is. Yeah, it's
like
grab your popcorn and pour a glass of, Merlot and sit back and watch the fireworks. It's going to be great. We also, I don't know if you've seen this. I'm going to drop this just so you can hear the sound effect here.
Ooh.
I have the newest installment from Randall Woods. He's an author and a writer, a history writer, on John Quincy Adams.
One of my favorites.
Agreed.
And I actually have his... autograph at my home.
Do you really?
Yeah, picture and an autograph on a letter that he wrote.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's one of my favorite presidents.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
For a lot of reasons. But this is over 700 pages of goodness on John Quincy Adams. So we'll talk to Randall Woods about that as well.
That book, reading that book would probably take me about 3 years.
Yeah, I'm not going to put a time limit on it. I'm just going to, it's like if somebody said, hey, I need you to rebuild this engine. I'll do it. It'll take me, the better part of two decades. So, I'll get through this as fast as I can, but it's going to be hefty.
Chris, it's always great to see
you. You too, my friend.
And it's always great to sit in for the legendary, great Paul W. Smith. By the way, this is Rocky Rachkovsky, but who's to correct the last
name?
I never say it that way. If you can't roll your R's, don't worry about it. It's Rocky Rachkovsky. I had a great time and would love to come back and do this anytime, Mike. Let me know. Thank you for joining us on Focus. Next is the great Chris Renwick.